Maine's Labor Commissioner. Earlier this year, Laura Fortman stepped back into a job she has held before. Fortman served as Commissioner of Labor under Governor John Baldacci and has returned to serve in the same position under Governor Janet Mills. In the years in between, Fortman worked in the Federal Department of Labor as Deputy Administrator for the Wage and Hour Division. I'm Jennifer Brooks. There are different challenges for Fortman this time around, namely a shortage of workers in many sectors of the economy. One of Fortman's big goals is to find jobs for more people who were previously left on the fringes, such as older workers and people with disabilities. She's also charged with enforcing Maine's new minimum wage and paid time leave laws. What would you like to see from Maine's Department of Labor? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. From wages to paid time off, so many of the challenging issues facing Maine are related to the workforce. We'll discuss these challenges and more today. My guest is Commissioner of the Department of Labor, Laura Fortman. She has held this position before under Governor John Baldacci. She also served as Deputy Administrator for the Wage and Hour Division at the U.S. Department of Labor. Commissioner Fortman, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. It's a pleasure to be here.
As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have for the commissioner about minimum wage, equal pay, or finding work in Maine? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. As we just mentioned, you have a lot of relevant experience for this job, including the fact that you have literally done this before. You headed Maine's Department of Labor during the Baldacci administration. What has changed the most since then?
Oh, there are so many things that have changed. But I think one of the most significant is that when I had this position before and we talked, it was in the kind of depths of the Great Recession. So what we were seeing were thousands of Maine people looking for work, and we were doing our best at the department to make sure that those programs like unemployment insurance were really there to provide that temporary wage replacement that workers needed. We were helping companies as they were kind of transitioning. And now we've got a different problem, which is a much happier problem to have, is that there is a tight labor market. So it's a different partnership that we have with employers right now, where they're really looking at how can they invest in the workers that they have so that they can retain them, and what can we be doing to be bringing more people into the workforce.
So it's almost like an entirely different job.
It is, in very many ways.
You know, you talked about the low unemployment rate. News just out that the Portland, South Portland area, the second lowest unemployment rate in the entire nation, 1.9%, the whole state with a low unemployment rate. And then news yesterday that Bath Ironworks is trying to hire 1,000 people. Are you optimistic that BIW will be able to fill 1,000 jobs?
Of course I am. And they are, too. And some of the things that they're doing, again, are things like it really investing in recruiting people, in providing upfront training to those workers, as well as looking at who are the people who are not currently here in Maine, but who might want to come back. There was a wonderful event last week called Hire a Vet. We just kicked off 100 days of recruiting veterans, and BIW was one of the featured employers there. And veterans want to come to Maine, and we just need to make sure that they know that there are good-paying jobs available for them if they decide to retire here.
Is there a worry or concern, though, that BIW will take employees, good employees from smaller companies who aren't in the position to offer the same kind of training retaining her benefits.
Well, that's why I think you need to be looking at pipelines. And one of the things that we try to do is identify what are transferable skills. Where are places that you can start a job? And then where are there career ladders and opportunities? And again, it really does come down to now is a time for not only individuals to recognize the importance of lifelong learning, but also where employers are really willing to come to the table as partners in helping to upskill the workforce.
Commissioner Fortman, you have stated publicly that one of your big goals is to bring people into the workforce who often are left on the fringe for whatever reason, whether they're folks who are older and only want to work part-time, have some sort of disability, have been released from the corrections system. What is the Department of Labor doing to facilitate that, to make it happen?
Well, one of the things about the Department of Labor is that we're frequently a department that convenes other organizations, and we work in partnership. We could not do our job alone. So whether it's partnering with businesses or with our other state agency partners like the Department of Corrections. So one of the things that we have done is with the Department of Corrections, we have brought employers actually into the prisons to have to get a better understanding of the people there, as well as to identify opportunities for job training for those folks who are going to be released into our communities. And we do know that having a job is one of the best ways to help people keep from reoffending. And Commissioner Liberty is one of the great partners that we have in this, who is also doing everything that he can to help strengthen that collaboration. So we'll bring employers in. We'll work with the career centers in the area to help identify skills training that people may need, as well as identifying skills that can be learned while people are still serving their time.
I want to talk to you about the minimum wage law that passed in 2016. We've hit the $11 an hour mark. Many feel that's not enough. It's not enough for a living wage. And it's not even going to be enough when we get to $12 an hour next year. Well, many businesses are saying that the minimum wage are starting to feel negative effects from having to not only pay their beginner workers more money, but then those all the way up their employment ranks. I'm wondering, from your perspective, what do you see as the impact of the minimum wage law so far? Do you believe it's working as intended? Do you think there need to be any changes made to it?
Well, I think there have been a number of pieces of legislation that were introduced in order to make changes to it. And the only change that was made was around the tipped minimum wage. I think as a department, we have stood by the legislation as it is that was passed by referendum in the state. It will go to $12 an hour in January, and then it's indexed. So it will gradually increase over time as well. I think the indexing is a really important piece of it. You know, it's interesting that we had the conversation about employers are having a hard time finding workers, and at the same time, a conversation about minimum wage. And one of the things that we're seeing is that as wages increase, some of the people who may have been sitting on the sidelines, for example, perhaps some of those older workers, are coming back into the workforce.
Some people are making the calculation that it might be worth it for $12 an hour when it wouldn't have been worth it for $10 an hour.
Or for $7 or $8 an hour, which it had been.
Another new law goes into effect January 1st, and that is the paid leave law, or paid sick law. How is the Department of Labor helping companies prepare for that implementation?
Well, first of all, it's not until January 1 of 2020. So it is not this January.
2021, you mean?
2021, yes.
Okay.
And so we have a little over a year to do that. And thank you for making sure it was 2021. that that we are holding stakeholder meetings. We will be doing that over the fall and throughout the next 6 months. And we encourage people, if they're interested in participating in any of those stakeholder meetings, to just email us so that they can get on the list. And we will also be doing lots of public announcements as it gets closer. So it'll be a period of time.
You know, yesterday was Labor Day, and the Maine Calling team rebroadcast a program you were on earlier this summer when we were talking about the workforce shortage. A few questions came in after that program, and some of them are really good, Commissioner. I want to start with one from Grayson. He writes, I think the elephant in the room is that there has been a massive restructuring of the relationship between employer, employee, labor, and production. There are many sectors of the economy that need investment that can only be done through state or federal government, including green energy infrastructure. How would a federal or state jobs guarantee affect Maine?
Wow, there is a lot in that question.
Yes, there is.
I think that there are a couple of things there. First, start with the employer-employee relationship. One of the things, because I was out and about yesterday meeting with a number of people across the state, and there was a conversation about the almost disconnect between the 3% unemployment rate and yet what's going on in people's lives, that many people are still struggling. Sense of security about the kind of job that they have isn't there, that there may not even be a traditional employment relationship present. So when he was asking about that, that's what I was thinking. Many of the jobs that we're seeing are more independent contractor jobs, and we really need to be looking at that and making sure, since so many of the benefits that we have, like I talked a little bit about unemployment before, unemployment, workers' compensation, Social Security, many of those are tied to employment relationships. And as we see that kind of fissuring of that employment relationship, we also need to look at what are those safety net programs that are there so that a hard day's work actually results in decent pay and some sense of security.
Sure. It's being called the gig economy, for better or worse. People who are either choosing to work on their own, enjoying the independence, or the many people who feel as though they don't have a choice. And those people may be not collecting Social Security benefits. They may not have unemployment benefits. They may not have all of what you just named. A sea change in the way we think about how Americans work.
Right. And we need to make sure that our programs kind of keep pace with that. And so one of the things that we are looking at is whether or not all of the people who think there's an independent contractor relationship, whether or not, in fact, that is a legitimate independent contractor relationship. If it's not, to make sure that people are appropriately, if it is independent contractor, that those individuals who are working that way are making the appropriate tax contributions that they should be.
Do you have a sense that in many cases is being exploited? And if so, is that
that's a
priority?
A concern. It is. It's definitely a priority to look into it. Misclassification of workers is a priority not only on a state level, but also on a federal level. We have an MOU with the U.S. Department of Labor around this issue. And I think at this point, about 40 other states also have that. So it's not something that's Maine specific, but we are seeing a change in the economy.
All right. Well, on a related note, we have a call in from Matt Schlobohm of the AFL-CIO. Hi, Matt. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi. Great to be with you.
As we are in the first year of this new administration and you're working again with Laura Fortman, what are your priorities going forward?
Yeah, it's wonderful to be working with Commissioner Fortman. I think we see this economy as deeply out of balance and that workers are not gaining a fair share of the wealth that they create, and that workers' rights need to be strengthened across the board if we're going to build a 21st century economy that recognizes that work has changed and that recognizes that we are living in times of staggering levels of inequality. So I think we are most interested in how do we strengthen workers' rights to bargain, workers' rights to organize, and then the basic protections that lead to a decent life. So paid family medical leave, paid sick days, safety on the job, dealing with the changing nature of the workforce. So across the board, I think we need to rewrite the rules of our economy at the state level, at the local level, at the federal level, to ensure and protect workers' fundamental freedom to organize and bargain for a better life, and to bring balance back to this economy so that workers gain a fair share of the wealth that they create.
All right. Laura, would you like to respond to Matt?
Well, and I think, and first of all, great talking to you, Matt. I think one of the pieces that he raised that we are especially interested in is around the enforcement, that it's important to make changes to laws, but it is equally important to make sure that those laws are enforced. And our commitment is to do that enforcement piece. And it's... that is critical not only to the workers, but also to all of the employers who are playing by the rules. One example I could give is, you had mentioned minimum wage a little bit earlier, but we see a number of instances where if you're a low-wage worker, you may be concerned about raising complaints about the wages that you're receiving. And when that happens and those workers are not being paid fairly, it is not only a loss to that individual, to their paycheck, but it's also a loss to all of those employers who are paying people fairly, and they're unfairly being undercut by the violators of the law. So we are very committed to making sure that any laws that are passed are enforced.
Matt, thanks so much for calling in today. That's Matt Schlobohm, the executive director of the Maine AFL-CIO. I want to talk about, just briefly, equal pay. More states are moving ahead with equal pay laws. In New York, Governor Cuomo just signed into law a bill that says employers must provide equal pay for, quote, substantially similar work. What's on tap for Maine along these lines?
Well, Maine actually, and I might get the year wrong, Jennifer, but I believe it was 1967 passed an equal pay law. So there has been a law on the books since at least the 1960s in May around equal pay. And there is the Maine Department of Labor actually has an enforcement responsibility around that law. Rules were created back in, I want to say, 2003 when I was first commissioner. It may have been a little bit earlier, a little bit later than that. But there is an assumption or a presumption under the law that if somebody files a complaint, the employer should be able to document why there's a discrepancy in the pay. We have not seen very many complaints. I don't know if it's because people are unaware that there's already a law in the books or if they don't know who to call. Many discrimination laws are enforced by the Maine Human Rights Commission. This is one that is enforced by the Maine Department of Labor.
All right. And so does somebody go onto your website to find the right number to call with a complaint?
Sure. You can just go to our website and get that information.
That's okay. We can say it after the break because we have to go to a break. When we come back, your comments and questions for Department of Labor Commissioner Laura Fortman. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Livingston Hughes Surveyors, full-service land surveying for homeowners, title companies, and mortgage lenders throughout Maine, livingstonhughes.com, and Crossroads, offering Maine's only gender-responsive residential treatment center for eating disorders and addiction. CrossroadsME.org.
On the next Fresh Air,
we're caught in a trap.
A 50th anniversary box set of Elvis Presley's 1969 comeback in Vegas has just been released. We'll talk with James Burton, the guitarist who played with Elvis on those concerts and until Elvis's death. Burton played with many iconic performers, including Sinatra. Join us.
What you doing to me?
Coming up tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. You've heard the tones before here on Maine Public Radio and perhaps also on Maine Public Television. Maine Public is the designated primary source for the entire state of Maine emergency alert system, which we transmit to all other stations for broadcast to all listeners and viewers all around the state. This is a valuable and important public service tool to help inform, alert, and warn citizens when situations warrant. And Maine Public's statewide infrastructure enables it to fulfill this vital task and public service.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, I'm talking with Laura Fortman. She's commissioner of the Department of Labor. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Right before the break, we were talking about the Department of Labor's number if you have a complaint, believe that you're not being paid equally. And in the during the break, Commissioner Fortman, you looked it up. What's the number?
Okay, so the number is 207-623-7900. That's 623-7900. The other thing is we also have a poster. It's a voluntary poster. It's not one of the mandatory posters. But if people would like a copy of that, they can get that on our website as well.
Sure, and we'll also post that on our webpage and Facebook page. Joining us now is Pat Pinto, AARP Maine's volunteer state president. Thanks for calling in, Pat.
Thank you.
Pat, what are some of the top concerns you hear from older adults in terms of employment and workforce issues?
Well, there are a variety of them. Again, people being in different, you know, situations. There are some people that I hear from a lot that want to extend the traditional retirement age, and some of them want to do so for a paycheck, and some want to do so because they want to find purpose and continue to contribute to issues that Maine is dealing with. Another example I can give you is one which is my own, which is I'm a 71-year-old woman, and I plan to now live to be 102, and I'm afraid that I might outlive my money. And so, again, there are issues such as that in terms of wanting to potentially go back into the workforce after having left it in order to basically earn some more money again.
Are some of the biggest challenges? Is one of the big challenges is that employers don't want to hire people part-time, or and also are we still seeing this sort of epidemic of age discrimination that seems to be so sticky and prevalent?
Yeah, age discrimination is definitely pervasive, and there are people, I mean, just recently AARP did a survey, and it showed that 34% of older workers believe that age discrimination is a reason that they could lose their jobs. So there's that happens in terms of people losing their jobs because of age. And then, again, as, you know, along that line, the majority of people impacted by a layover are generally those over 50. Again, it's a complex issue. Some people want to look for work again, and they haven't looked for a job in decades, so they don't know how to do it. And many of these people find that, or feel at least, that nobody wants to hire them.
Commissioner Fortman, is it a special focus of the Department of Labor to help older Mainers come back into the workforce?
That is one of the populations that we are doing outreach to, and we're even holding in the Rockland area, we're piloting going into some of the retirement living areas and trying to hold job fairs there. We've found employers very receptive. I think, again, getting back to the tight labor market, now is the time where employers are willing to be a little bit more flexible, as well as they respect the kind of reliability that many older workers have traditionally brought, as well as the deep knowledge that they have. Also the career centers. There are 12 career centers across the state, and those are the one-stop shopping for anyone looking for work. And there are sessions at the career centers to help older workers prepare for those job interviews, especially if you haven't been on one in a while.
Pat, thanks so much for calling in. That's Pat, Volunteer State President for AARP Maine. If you'd like to join the conversation with Labor Commissioner Laura Fortman, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We have an email here from Beth. Many people work for the state of Maine as contractors. I have been working as a contractor for 4 years full-time in April through October and part-time November through March. I do not get any paid holidays, including Memorial Day, July 4th, Labor Day, Thanksgiving, Christmas, or New Year's Day. I do not get paid vacation or paid time off for illness. In 4 years, I have received a $1 pay increase. What are you planning to do to make contract work fair?
Contract work specifically for the state of Maine is probably not something that I would be able to weigh in on. I know that for us, one of the things at the Maine Department of Labor that we do is if we do have to hire contractors, that we do look to see if the company that we're using does pay benefits. And that's something I can bring back to the commissioner of the Division of Administration and Finances. I would also be looking at what the state contract has in it about those services. We have just recently at the Department of Labor weighed in on federal regulations about contracting out state services and the position that we have taken, supported by the administration, is that we should not be contracting out state services that aren't necessary to be contracted out.
We'll go to Johnette, who's calling from Holden. Hi, Johnette. Go ahead.
Hi there. Many of us have been reading stories about job loss from automation, and they had, in fact, there was a story on Point, I think, just the other day. And I'm looking at a report, a McKinsey report, that says that we could lose 51% of our jobs within the next 15 years. And these are the basic jobs, just exactly the kind of jobs that people need who are coming into the market, coming into the labor market, these marginal groups, these vulnerable groups that need these manual jobs. So I'm just would love to hear your comment about that and, well, how can we prepare ourselves? Many of us have already seen this happen with Walmart when we go in and we all check ourselves out. We don't have any of those people nearly as many cashiers. But it's happening throughout our whole economy, according to the material that I'm reading. So I just want to
Know
your views.
Mm-hmm. Sure, and I don't have that particular report in front of me, so I'm sorry if I can't specifically address it. But the issue of artificial intelligence and what is happening and what direction are we going in is one that we are paying attention to. And you've already identified one of the most important things that can happen, which is that constant retraining, that while we lose many of those jobs to automation, there are many, many other jobs that will be still available but require higher skill sets or more in person, that there are some positions that you just need the ability to do the complex thinking that only humans can do. So just as you talked about the checkout counters that we're seeing automated now, I remember when we went to computers and there was a concern about what's going to happen to all of the secretarial pools. People are creative and they do transition, but I do think that you're correct. We should be thinking about that now, identifying what are those skills that are going to endure over these kinds of transitions.
Johnette, thanks for your call. Now we are going to go to Beth Stickney. She's Executive Director of the Maine Business Immigration Coalition. Thanks for calling in, Beth.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
How important are immigrants to the workforce in Maine right now? Can you characterize the impact?
Immigrants are hugely important to Maine's workforce, and quite frankly, we need more of them, as I'm sure you know, Commissioner Fortman would agree. Our population, our native-born citizen population, is shrinking as baby boomers age, and as you know, our families are smaller. I always, you know, look at my own family history and say my father was one of eight children, I was one of four, and my daughter is one of one, and that's happened all across our state. And so our only population gain, you know, certainly in the last decade, has been due to immigration from, you know, people coming from abroad. And, you know, without those people, our labor shortage, which is huge right now as we have very, very, you know, record low unemployment, our labor shortage would be even worse than it is now. And immigrants, even when they come as professionals, it's unfortunate that we have this phenomenon called brain waste, where people who have university degrees and high skills often are not able to work in their professions, sometimes because their English just isn't quite good enough to break into those fields, or other times because, you know, your law degree from Ghana, you know, doesn't translate to being legally allowed to practice law here in Maine. So we have professionals who are working in every type of job, including, you know, what we consider to be sort of lower wage jobs. And then we have people who, you know, don't necessarily have professional credentials, who also, because they know they're just getting started and they want to make sure that they can provide for their families, are willing to work in some of the areas where we most need people, such as in hospitality, in construction, in elder care, and then of course they are working in high tech, and you know they're working in places like Jackson Labs and et cetera. So you know, just in every sector of our economy, immigrants are hugely important.
Beth, before we let you go, I want to know if you have a question for the commissioner.
Not really a question, but I just want to commend the commissioner for, you know, thinking big. I've had conversations with Commissioner Fortman in the past as we talk about, you know, how do we do a better job of integrating immigrants into our economy, and, you know, particularly with the most recent asylum seekers who have arrived, who under federal law, unfortunately, won't be able to get their work permits for a bit. How can we work on, you know, figuring out ways to do job skills training, et cetera, so that they are more work ready to jump into the jobs that we have available here in Maine as soon as they get their work permits? And, you know, having a commissioner who is open to having those conversations is just, you know, really refreshing, and I think will prove to be extremely, extremely helpful.
Thank you so much for joining us. Beth Stickney, Director of the Maine Business Immigration Coalition. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Yeah, and well, first of all, thank you for the kind words, Beth. Now I just need to live up to them, which I intend to. You mentioned two really important pieces. One is the English language fluency, and that is something that we are trying to figure out. You know, what can we do about that? Because it's not only a barrier to get that first job, but it also may be keeping people from moving up in the career that of their choice. So English language is critical. And then the other piece is the credentialing piece. And we're working again collaboratively to try to see what we can do as a state. And this is an issue that's happening not only in Maine, but across the country. So we are exploring what are the models out there. And the credentialing issue is not just important to immigrants. It's also important to people who come from other states, even if they are native born, because I think I heard a number the other day that it was something like every state licenses about 30 professions, but each state also licenses about 120. professions, but they're all different.
Mm.
So I think trying to understand what are the key licenses that are required. Are there partnerships? Are there MOUs? Are there other relationships that we can have with other states so that when somebody comes in, if they have appropriate training, we can put them into an appropriate job?
Thank you, Beth. And I want to ask a follow-up to Beth. You know, we've heard a lot, especially with this recent group of asylum seekers who has come into the southern Maine area through Portland. We've heard a lot that they're not allowed by law to work for a certain number of days or months. And I'm wondering, is there something that can be done to help prepare that group of people to be able to work when they are allowed to?
So I can try to answer that. So for the department, Maine Department of Labor, about 94% of our funding is federal funds, and those funds cannot be expended on anyone who is not authorized to work. So until they are authorized to work in the U.S., we cannot spend any money.
So they can't enroll in a job training program?
We cannot spend any money, any federal funds, on those folks. What we can do is that, as I mentioned before, we have 12, there are 12 career centers across the state. Those services are required to be provided to anyone who seeks them. So if someone came in and wanted some sort of a skill assessment that's available to everyone, they could have that, but they could not have specific dollars targeted to job training.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with the Commissioner of Labor, Laura Fortman. We're going to take another quick break. We'd love to hear from you. Do you have questions or ideas for her? The phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a quick, brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Modern Pest, focused on providing pest prevention solutions. Learn more at modernpest.com. By Salt Pump Climbing, dedicated to providing indoor rock climbing at its finest. Learn more at saltpumpclimbing.com. And Diversions, Puzzles, and Games by Maine Mall, committed to bringing people together with new and classic games and a variety of puzzles. Diversionsgames.com.
An NPR investigation finds low-income neighborhoods in dozens of major cities nationwide are hotter than their wealthier counterparts, and that can take a serious toll on health.
It is the most significant public health problem that we have. It's going to be here for a long time, and it's getting worse.
That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us this afternoon from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. And coming up at 2 o'clock after Maine Calling, it's Ground Shift, the BBC documentary about the farming revolution, a look at the challenges facing family farms in the American Midwest and Australian outback. Again at 2 o'clock following Maine Calling, right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, a conversation with Maine Department of Labor Commissioner Laura Fortman. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from Holly. She writes, as the president of Maine Career Development Association, what is the best way that agencies, schools, and private career development professionals can help?
That's a great question, and I'm sure that she knows that all of the workforce development public sector money is overseen by a federal program called the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, and that requires all of the partners to link, leverage, and align resources. So there are 12 career centers across the state, there are 3 state workforce boards, and then we have a state workforce board. I would encourage her to work with the local workforce board, where we really do try to bring together, and by we, I mean the partners, we're all in this together, that it links government, nonprofits, education to identify the opportunities for people, the best career pathways, and that all of us have to be working together to make this successful.
We have a Facebook comment from Marty Groman at E2 Tech. He writes, with significant changes to statewide energy policy, Maine is poised for fast growth and clean technology employment. Do we have a statewide analysis of the size and scope of the clean technology workforce, and what policy levers can we pull to grow it?
Thanks, Marty. Well, one of the many coalitions that has come together is that there is the new Climate Council, and that's being, I think, their first official public meeting is, I want to say, later this month. And that council has a workforce component to it, and we are working closely with them. The last time that it was, there was a green energy jobs report that was done was in the mid-2000s, and one of the tasks is to update that. And then also identify, we have a main career, a job link, so that you can apply for jobs on there. And we're looking at ways to identify those green jobs on that site. It's not there yet, but it'll be coming soon, we hope.
All right. We'll go to Suzanne, who's calling from Nobleboro. Hi, Suzanne. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. You know who I am and what I'm calling about. I think we need to do some serious thinking about domestic conversion at Bath Iron Works. We are producing $8 billion on warships that do nothing but cause further wars and destruction of our planet. We need to convert to wind turbines, modern rail service, maybe even freight ships, because the U.S. is very much lacking in freight ships. General Dynamics CEOs are making hundreds of millions of dollars in benefits through war production. Eisenhower warned us about the military-industrial complex. We need to convert to domestic uses, and we could certainly employ a lot more people there at Bath Iron Works doing this kind of work. I'd like your thoughts.
Suzanne, thanks for your call, and I know that you don't feel alone. You're not the only person who feels this way. Go ahead.
No, and I thank you, Suzanne, and it's good to hear from you. I think that this ties in a little bit with the previous caller with Marty about what can we be doing to grow, like wind and the new economy here. So I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate how passionate you are about this issue.
Thank you, Suzanne. A Facebook comment from Nancy. In past years, the draconian disability rules penalize people on disability and their dependents for any income they could manage to get. The dollar-for-dollar amount they earned would be deducted from their monthly benefit. Since the benefit amount was punishingly low, families were sentenced to humiliating, unhealthful, stressful poverty. How can those rules be changed?
That's a great question. And I mean, one of the things that we're doing is that we are working with benefit counselors. As I'm sure you know, the Bureau of Vocational Rehabilitation Services is part of the Maine Department of Labor, and making sure that people are able to pursue their dreams and aspirations is important to us, but also making sure that they understand what the benefit structure is and that they are able to make good decisions, but also have good jobs so that they have the benefits that they need.
All right. And we have two emails that came in after yesterday's program, and they're related. So I'm just going to read both of them. This one's from Lon. He says, there's a lot of dancing around the issue of wages. One big reason there's a shortage of workers in Maine is that there is a large percentage of working people in Maine to have to work two or more jobs to make a living. I've lived and worked in seven different states in my life, and this is the first place I've lived where the numbers of multi-job situations are this high. Wages must come into alignment with the cost of living. It's that simple and basic. And a tweet from Lindell, wages and wage stagnation really are a problem in Maine. I've barely scraped by the whole time I've lived here in Maine, 7 years. I moved here for a STEM job in higher education. Part of the problem is low wages plus high cost of living, and I don't live in the South.
And I think that when we started this conversation, I had said that 3% unemployment rate has not translated into economic security for all Maine people. So we're acutely aware of this. I think the governor has tasked the commissioner of economic development to come up with an economic development strategy. We're actively participating in that process. That will be released. And I know one of the key components of that is increasing wages for Maine people. And once the economic development strategy is released, we will be working on a companion workforce development strategy.
And that economic development plan is expected mid-November, correct?
November 15th, I believe.
Okay, great. We'll go to Nancy calling from Manchester. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. This was a question for Laura. I have property in Manchester, but I live in Massachusetts, and I have a very hard time trying to find qualified tradespeople to work on my property. Is the Department of Labor doing anything as far as training programs go to probably train more people in the trades so that we can get our houses repaired and things fixed here? And we don't need to import more labor from foreign countries. There's plenty of people right here that need jobs. But they are not going to work for minimum wage and then lose their benefits if they have subsidized housing or food stamps.
Well, thank you for the question, and I think I'll focus on the skilled trades piece of it. Apprenticeship is a program that we have been working with lots of employers on. It is growing rapidly, and those traditionally have been jobs in the trades. Apprenticeship is beyond that, but supporting plumbers, pipe fitters, our electricians are things that that we definitely know the value of, and know that those jobs can be you can receive good wages, a good paying job, and you can stay in the community. One of the ways that we're trying to emphasize that is by working with the schools, making sure that people have good information about the wages of those jobs and those opportunities. We're also doing outreach to the career technical centers and have been having conversations about how to take apprenticeship programs into the schools and then make sure that people are able to transition to full-time employment.
And what about the second part of Nancy's question? What do we know about who is out there? How many people are out there who could be working and are not?
Well, I mean, I think that's a really interesting question. And exactly why they aren't working. The workforce has been stable at about 700,000 people for, I think, close to 15 years. There are people who are on the margins, and those are some of the folks we talked about who have disabilities, who may have retired or may be nearing retirement. If we dig down, there are probably about 70,000 people in the state who are not actively engaged in the workforce for one reason or another. And we're doing our best to make sure that any of those people who want to work are in the workforce.
How big of a factor is the opioid epidemic in affecting Maine's workforce?
That's an area that we're concerned about, and one of the populations that we're reaching out to are people in recovery. And again, employers are much more willing to work with us on helping people who are in recovery find employment. And we will, the governor has a recovery, again, a cabinet. These issues, I keep mentioning other cabinets, other collaborations, that it really does require all of us to bring our expertise and our resources to the table to address these issues.
Nancy, thanks for calling into Maine Calling today. We're going to Natasha, who's calling from Dover Foxcroft. Hi, Natasha. Go ahead.
Hey, so my husband and I have a small business, Bruce Mill Farm and Kitchen, and since we started, our goal has been to create jobs in a rural town. And we've taken in, I think we have like 5 employees at the time. However, with the increasing wages and stuff like that, it's been like harder and harder to grow our business and find qualified workers. So I guess like what are you doing to help out the small businesses, and like, how do we keep up with growing our business while also trying to pay higher wages? And then there's the other thing with, like, as wages go up, so does our workman's comp and everything else.
Yeah, and I think the governor has a particular focus on small businesses. And again, the economic development strategy is looking at that. I think sometimes it almost pits, like, working people against small business owners, which is, I think, a false dichotomy, and that we have to find strategies that support the growth of the small businesses so that they can also, pay the kinds of wages that they want to pay and keep a loyal and skilled workforce. So a rural economic strategy is a key piece of what the economic development plan is looking at.
And Natasha, since you're on the air, why don't I turn the question around to you and ask you, what would you like to have from the state? What would help your business?
I don't know. I mean, I guess between like the workers' comp and just taxes in general, it's not an easy area to run a small business for us.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling into Maine Calling today, Natasha in Dover Foxcroft. It seems as though, Commissioner Fortman, that there are different strategies and different solutions depending what part of the state we're talking about.
I think that's true, which is why as complicated as the workforce development system is, it is very much based on local workforce boards, local strategies. Each board must be 51% businesses, so that those particular needs of the employers in those regions are addressed and can be matched to the kinds of skills that are needed in their area. And I think that we also have to recognize that the folks at the local level are the ones who are going to be more creative. I know sometimes it's like, oh, can we just find this big employer and plop them down in the middle of, whatever, Eastport, and it's all going to take care of Washington County. The reality is we do need to grow those businesses that are here, help them thrive, identify what the key elements are, and how do you build on those strengths and those resiliencies.
All right. Well, I want to wrap up with you, Commissioner Fortman, by asking you if we were to have you back on Maine Calling in 3 years or so, and how would you measure success? What would you like to see that you can be a part of the solution for happen in Maine?
Well, I would say that we would hopefully the hard work would be paying for Maine people, that they would feel like they're thriving, that businesses would also feel supported. That anyone who was looking for career opportunities would find it here, that no Maine young person would feel that they had to leave the state for opportunity, and that everyone would feel welcome here.
Well, thank you so much. That's Commissioner Laura Fortman, who is the head of Maine's Department of Labor. Sandra Harris ran the board today. We had additional help from Scott McCallum. Lucy Suchek took your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources, at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.